Welcome to the latest edition of the Bundesliga Show. I'm Terry DeFellin from the Bundesbag, and I'm joined by John Hartley of the Bundesliga World Blog. Hello, John. Have you recovered from Sampaoli's defeat at the weekend?
Yeah, I have recovered. Because what can I say? It wasn't necessarily unexpected, though, was it? I mean, Sampaoli have been playing well, had a fantastic result against Hamburg during the week, but going to the Westfalen is a different matter. And they went there, and to be honest, yes, Sampaoli were convincingly beaten, and it could have been more. Kessler in goal for Sampaoli, well, kept out Dortmund for a lot of the game, but he could only keep them out for so long. So I have to say, yeah, the league leaders, it was a convincing win. They deserved the result. I'm just surprised it took 39 minutes for Dortmund to get onto the score sheet, to be perfectly honest.
Now, we are, of course, talking about Borussia Dortmund's 2-0 win over Sampaoli. It was only Dortmund's third win at home this season. In fact, it's only their third win since the season restarted, I should say, after the winter break, and restores their lead to the top of the table to double figures, 10 points over second place by Leverkusen. Lucas Barrios scored his 10th goal of the season, and the unfortunate Ralf Gunesch scored an unfortunate own goal. From BVB's point of view, it's as well that they did win, given that Leverkusen and Bayern are poised to take advantage of any slip-ups. They're having a great time at the moment. Leverkusen compounded Stuttgart's woes with a 4-2 win at the Bayer Arena. Stefan Kiesling had a brace there. And Bayern took a bit of a pounding from Mainz, in my opinion, early on in that Saturday evening game, and typically ended up winning 3-1. John, any other season, you'd say that both teams are hitting good form at the right time. But surely these two are reconciled to a battle for second place.
Yeah, they probably are reconciled to a spot in second place. But you are right, they are hitting form at the right time. And to be honest, I mean, this battle, as we've discussed before, for second place, is a crucial one, because it allows you an automatic place into the group stage of the Champions League. So that is nothing to be sniffed at all. And, you know, from both of those clubs' perspectives, being in the Champions League and not having to qualify is a really big deal. And I can see that they are both going to go for it in a big, big way. So, yeah, it's certainly all to play for that second spot. When it comes to the two teams and the way that they played at the weekend, yes, I think that Bayern did have to did struggle through parts of their game against Mainz. But I think it's a real sign of the quality that they have, that they came out and won the game. And it was also a demonstration of the difference that Robben makes to that side. I mean, absolutely fantastic. I think that he had a hand in two of those goals. His passing was absolutely immaculate. And it really does demonstrate what a different side that they can be. They were already good, but when he's in the side, when you've got Ribery in there as well, their goals were quite breathtaking in their build-ups in parts. It was really, really good stuff. But, you know, they had to battle through a bit as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, I thought the assist for one of Robben's goal, I think that sort of overhead flick assist, I think it was for Bayern's second goal, was absolutely sensational. And you have to wonder if he could play a full season, if he played a full season this season. And Dortmund being what they are and the way that they have played, if Bayern had Robben from the beginning of the season, then it could well have been this sort of like two-way tussle for the title, you know, La Liga at the moment. Bayern have a big match against Inter, but you will no doubt all know the result of by the time you listen to this. So we won't get involved in that. But I did want to talk about one other result at the bottom of the table, and that's Borussia Mönchengladbach's 2-1 win over Schalke. John, Felix Magath blamed this defeat on the team's Champions League exploits last week. Do you buy that, or do you blame Schalke's defence?
I think that you have to do a little bit of both, I suppose. I mean, they did play that game in midweek, and you know, they were put through the ringer a little bit in the Champions League as well. But you know, they still came out with a result. But when you've got a team with a new manager involved, then it was always going to be difficult at Gladbach, and they know the back's against the wall. Lucien Favre has just arrived. He's changing a few things. He's brought in a few players that were being left out because of their their problems of attitude, I suppose. But yeah, I don't know. It was just going to be a very difficult game. But I think you've got to ask questions of the Schalke defence. Far too many gaps in there. You know, they were so static at times, and it really could have been more than 2-1 at points. I think that Gladbach hit the woodwork on a couple of occasions. Hermann should have put one in. You know, it could have been more than that, and I think that really Felix Magath should be relieved that it was only 2-1. But great three points for Gladbach, really, and they will really need to build on this if they have any hope whatsoever of getting out of, the really awful situation that they're in, though, aren't they?
Indeed. Well, I mean, great testimony to their character going 1-0 down after the, you know, so early in the game. Marco Reus's strike was just emphasises, you know, how much I suspect Gladbach are going to miss him next season at whatever division that they're in, because it's hard to imagine him staying at Gladbach. But Idrissou, who is has a reputation for being something of a spiky character, perhaps in the dressing room, recalled by Lucien Favre with immediate results, but with a fantastic header. So they've got a big game. Well, they're all big games, aren't they? They've got another big game, perhaps a winnable game that we'll look at in part three. Before we go on to our special guest, which we have in part two, I'll just wrap things up for this part with just a quick rundown of the remaining scores from the last weekend. Nuremberg beat Eintracht Frankfurt 3-0. No goals for Frankfurt in 2011. Sorry, I missed this one actually, because I really would like to have a good look at Nuremberg, you know, since they seem to be in such good form. Apologies to Hamburg fans for not really delving into the Hamburg v Bremen result that much. We'll perhaps visit both clubs a bit later in the season, or maybe next week. Freiburg beat Wolfsburg 2-0. Lots of speculation that Wolfsburg general manager Dieter Hönes is looking for another coach already, not giving Lipbarski that much of a chance there, and difficult to it's easy to see why, in fairness. And Hoffenheim, they drew with Cologne, and Hannover beat Kaiserslautern, which puts that 3-0, which puts Mirko Slomka's team in the hunt for a European spot. So without further ado, it's time for part two. Earlier this evening, we recorded an interview with Uli Hesse. I'm sure you're all familiar with him, and that's coming up right now.
Welcome back. Now on the Bundesliga show, we're joined by the esteemed author of Tor, the Story of German Football, Uli Hesse. Uli, it's a real joy to have you on the show, and I know that I can speak on behalf of myself and Terry when I say that Tor really opened up our knowledge and understanding of German football, and it, in no small way, has led to this podcast. So thank you very much for being on the show.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. Hello, am I the esteemed writer? Wow. I mean, that's a term I've rarely heard in connection with my name, but it sounds good.
Well, as you're on the show, it would be remiss of us not to talk about your club, Borussia Dortmund. The club may be riding high at the top of the Bundesliga table, but I wanted to talk about the ups and downs that have surrounded the club since the late 1990s. So with that in mind, let's wind the clock back to the 28th of May 1997, the Olympic Stadium in Munich, where BVB triumphed 3-1 over Juventus in the Champions League final. Firstly, at that point, you must have been absolutely delighted. But what were your thoughts about what the future of the club actually held at that point?
You know, when you have a day like that, I mean, that's very difficult to answer, because driving to Munich, I was convinced we would lose the game. I mean, Dortmund, like you said, had a very good team at that point. But Juventus were the overwhelming favourites. But, you know, When you want to talk about ups and downs, I've had some. I've been following the club since the mid-70s. I was born in Dortmund. But, you know, so for a long time, for me, there was, you know, even the idea that Dortmund would one day win a trophy was almost inconceivable. You know, we were a mid-table club and often fighting relegation. But on that day, I had three 17-year-old boys in the car with me. They were not my boys. They were just friends and neighbors, and I was sort of the designated driver. And on the way home, driving home from Dortmund, you know, and I had like, imagine the scene. I had like 3 17-year-old kids sitting in the car with me, each with at least 2 cans of beer, and me driving. And at one point I said to them, listen, I just realized you're 17 years old, and you've just won 2 Bundesliga titles in a row, and you've won the Champions League against Juventus. What is there left for you to do with the rest of your lives? So they were quiet for like 10 seconds. And then one of them said, well, I think we'll go to Tokyo and win the World Club Cup. And that's, I mean, they didn't go in person to Tokyo, but that's what they did. You know, Dortmund won the World Club Championship in Tokyo. And so what I'm saying is that for the young fans, this seemed almost natural. You know, Dortmund are a top team, great players. We can compete in Europe. We may even, you know, win the World Club Cup. So I know I'm evading the question, the answer, actually. But it depends on what kind of fan you're talking about. So if you grew up with Dortmund as a top team, then the future seemed really, really bright. But, you know, some of the older fans, you know, they just took it as it happened. And I don't think they were expecting, you know, that we would dominate for years and years. The people who ran the club felt differently.
Yeah, they did. And that, obviously, from that great win, there were so many changes ahead for Dortmund. You know, work had started on the transforming of the Westfalenstadion and to the ground that we know today is that fantastic, you know, cathedral of football. And on the pitch, BVB also won the Bundesliga in 2002. But off the club, you know, as you were saying, that things started to change. The floated on the stock market, the first and only Bundesliga club to ever be floated on the stock market, and it really sort of hit the wall in 2005. So what happened behind the scenes in those few years?
Well, it wasn't just a few years, because, you know, in retrospect it looks as if, you know, 97 was such a wonderful year, such a wonderful team, everything was rosy, and then the problem started. But in fact, the 97 team was, even though it was not as star-studded a side as Juventus had on that day, it was an expensive team, and a lot of these players had been bought for a lot of money. So it was, you know, we probably have to go back to 93 to the UEFA Cup final, when Dortmund made a lot of money in the UEFA Cup due to a short-lived system that was in place then, having to do with how the money got distributed. And that sort of put a lot of money into the club's hand, and you know, it sort of set the ball rolling, and then reached the point where at one point you have to decide what you want to do. Do you want to stay in contention and spend more money or not? And that was sort of the point which the club reached in the late 90s, was how do we stay in contention? You know, the story of the Bundesliga is the story of teams who try to compete with Bayern Munich. And the trick is not competing with Bayern Munich. The trick is to stay in contention. You know, there's always been clubs like Gladbach in the 70s, or Bremen, or Cologne, who challenged Bayern Munich for a couple of years. And then they ran out of steam. And Dortmund tried to not run out of steam, literally by pumping money into the team. And not just into the team, but into the whole of the club. And in the late 90s, I think the minimum goal was world domination. That's how you felt when you were connected with a club. It was not just floating money. Floating shares and earning a lot of money. And you know, we spent 25 million euros on Marcio Amoroso, a great player. But 25 million euros, you know, that's Ribéry money and Edin Dzeko money. But that was 10 years ago. So we earned a lot of money. We spend even more money. And
are there possible comparisons with Leeds United in the UK? I mean, that's the story that we know also well.
Maybe, even though, not quite, because after all, Leeds United were trying to you know, to become really successful on the European stage and in the Premier League, Dortmund were successful. You know, they had won the league and they had won the Champions League. So the trick was to stay in contention, to stay at that level. And there were all kinds of really bizarre deals which the club struck. Because, you know, the problem is at one point you have to find ever new ways of generating money. You know, that is the main problem, especially in a country like Germany where due to various things, the television money isn't what it is in England and Italy and Spain. So basically you have to stay in contention, you have to spend more and more money, and that means you have to generate new ways of earning money. And that led to all kinds of very strange deals. For instance, one of the deals that I usually like to cite is that Dortmund had a very lucrative contract, an endorsement contract with Nike. And at some point, somebody at the club must have walked through a sports apparel store and seen, you know, those Dortmund replica shirts and had a look at the price tag and must have thought, Jesus, you know, if we produce these things ourselves, we could pocket, you know, all of it, a ton of money. And so they cancelled the Nike deal and started their own apparel company from scratch, you know, just to produce their own replica shirts. And then we had travel agencies and internet companies and all kinds of things. And one of the most problematic deals was that the club needed money to rebuild the ground, to make it even bigger than it was. I mean, you know, it is big now. It was even 3,000 or 4,000 bigger in like 10 years ago. It held, I think it holds a shade over 80,000 now. It held a shade over 83,000 back then. You know, these are Barcelona dimensions. And to do that, the club sold the ground to an investment company. Now, this is a very complicated deal. I keep it as simple as I can. The club sold the ground, got money to rebuild the ground, and then gradually bought back the ground from that company at an enormous annual rate. Of course, that was the main reason this company struck the deal. You know, they wanted to earn money. So when something like this happens, and this happens at even at very small companies, that you spend more and more money, and you have to generate more money as a result of that. And as soon as you run into a problem on a generating side, you are really in deep, deep trouble. And that at the end, that happened basically happened on the pitch. It wasn't that we made really bad transfers or had a terrible team or anything like that or made bad coaching decisions. It was like at one point, sooner or later you will run out of luck. You will have a few bad results, and that ruins everything. In Dortmund's case, there was Real Madrid scored a very late goal in the 2003 Champions League that knocked us out of that tournament. Then we got into the Champions League qualifiers but lost to Bruges on penalties. Little things like that, things that can happen. But normally, you know, for a club that is healthy, that has the right balance between money coming in and money going out, that shouldn't be a problem. You should cope with that for 2 or 3 years. But Dortmund couldn't at that point.
I suppose that's the problem, though, when you make those kind of investments and yet the success is based on extremely fine margins, like a single or one or two games of football can suddenly not only ruin your season, but it can certainly ruin your club. What do you suppose would have happened if, I mean, a few years ago, before Jurgen Klopp arrived, Thomas Doll was the manager, and they weren't certainly from an outsider's perspective, from over here in England, they weren't great fun to watch. It's got to be said. What do you think would have happened if they'd been relegated? Do you think that would have been dire, or?
Of course, they weren't fun to watch. They were awful. I mean, they were not awful in, like, you know, getting relegated to the second division awful, but awful in, you know, do I have to watch this? I mean, I've been. I've had people tell me in the stands that this guy, you know, is playing the ground empty, referring to the coach, actually to a string of coaches. So, yeah, but yes, the results were so-so-ish. The football was nothing to write home about. And yes, you were right, pretty much until Klopp came in, yes.
I mean, what happens? I mean, when you're having bad seasons like that. I mean, what's the atmosphere like in a stadium? Because it's a mighty atmosphere in there when things are going well. I've only been to Dortmund when they've won handsomely, and I'm willing to accept any payment from any fan group who would like to send me there every home game because I clearly bring goals with me. But I've never been in the stadium when things are going well, going badly rather. I mean, what's the atmosphere in a stadium like when they're in a nasty slump? I mean, can it work against the players?
Oh yes, definitely. Because it's not like that people stop coming when things aren't going well. I mean, of course they did stop coming to a degree, but it's not like. It's not like the difference is not between, say, 80,000 and 20,000, you know? Like, so that means when you're having a bad season, there's still 60,000 or 70,000 people at the ground. And if they don't make a noise or make catcalls, you know, not making a noise is probably worse for the players. That, yes, sure, that has an effect.
Yeah, well, thankfully, the troubles off the pitch seem to be coming to an end now, and there's potentially seeing a really dramatic turnaround with a league title potentially on the horizon and a place in the Champions League, and that has happened in quite a short space of time. But that's obviously been due to a major rethink on the money side of it that's been available to Jurgen Klopp. But there's been some shrewd decisions and player acquisitions, and the fruits of a successful youth policy as well. Are the financial problems far enough behind the club to keep this, you know, genuinely talented side together, or is this new golden era for Dortmund going to be quite short-lived?
Well, the financial problems are not totally behind the club, but for all I know, they're manageable right now. it was really, I don't know if this was a news item, a bigger news item in England, but the club was virtually on the brink of bankruptcy. In March of 2005, I mentioned this company that they sold the ground to, which was not really a company; it was a group of investors. And Dortmund basically could no longer pay the interest. Is that the term? The financial term? I think yes.
Mm-hmm.
The interest rates, and so and they called together all those investors, many of them small investors, and. They had a meeting in March, and if this group had voted against the financial plan the club presented them with, the club would have been bankrupt, you know, from one minute to the next. So so that was a pretty, pretty close call. I mean, it wasn't entirely as bad as it sounds right now, because everybody was hoping that the vote would be in favor of the new financial scheme, because why would those investors, you know, sort of kill off, you know, the company that owed them money. But it was close, and ever since the main goal has been to put the club back onto a stable financial basis. That was the main objective. but that doesn't mean there wasn't money to spend. The coaches before Klopp came in, they spent money, and they had, you know, Dortmund were in the German FA Cup final, like in 2008, which is, I admit, they got there almost by accident, but they got into the final with a very old and experienced squad, full of good players who had cost money, players like Mladen Petric and Alex Frey, the Swiss striker. So it's not necessarily that they went to Klopp and said, you don't have any money, build us a great team. It's like that Klopp has made all those, you know, he comes from Mainz. So he made his name at Mainz, coaching lower mid-table club like Mainz, where there was no money at all. So I think Klopp is used to dealing with players who aren't, you know, established stars and who aren't expensive. And actually the kind of football that he likes to play almost demands that you don't have any star players, or at least, you know, not those traditional star players, you know, not those traditional divas who want, you know, don't want to track back and have other people doing the hard work for them. So that was a stroke of luck. So that Klopp basically came in, and I'm sorry. For instance, one of the first deals that he really made was that he sold Mladen Petrović, a really good striker, to Hamburg, because it was a chance to get Mohamed Zidane, who was unhappy at Hamburg. And for Klopp, this made total sense. You know, Petrović, for all his strengths, is, you know, he doesn't like to run around that much. Whereas Zidane, for all his weaknesses, is a good team player. So that was sort of the deal that looked natural to Klopp and came natural to him, and it earned the club money. But I think that was a bonus.
Well, speaking of the current Klopp, your current crop under Jurgen Klopp, they travel to Bayern Munich this weekend. Now, with Bayern's form at the moment, I really see this as the biggest test for Dortmund so far this season. How do you see this one going? Are you confident?
Yeah, first, I agree. I think, having a look at the table, you would think that the team is 10 points ahead of Leverkusen and 13 points ahead of Bayern Munich. So it's probably a make-or-break game for Bayern, because if they don't win this, they can forget about winning the league. But then again, on the other hand, there's always a, you know, from a psychological point of view, I think a lot of people in Dortmund feel that way, that this sort of a big league-deciding game, that if Dortmund said this is the real test, because most people here, even though Leverkusen actually in second place, even though, you know, Bayern are behind Leverkusen, most people here regard Bayern as, you know, the true rival for the title this season. And I think it's about time that, we haven't won there in 18 years, 17 or 18 years. I mean, even during those 90s, the years in the 90s when the team was really, you know, when we had all these star players and won the Champions League, we didn't win away at Bayern. So,
do you think
it's about time, isn't it?
Do you think, Uli, that there is will be added legitimacy to Dortmund if they were to win the title, if they go to Bayern and win? Do you think that somehow, if they win the title but still don't go to Bayern and win, that somehow this would lessen the success?
No, I don't think so. No. I know what you're getting at, but no. I think nobody over here cares about that.
Just the winning that counts, isn't it? The plate at the end of the plate at the end of the season.
Yes, we've won the, you know, normally you cannot expect to go into a season and win both games against Bayern Munich. You can't expect to do that, you know, no matter who you are. So we've beaten them at home. So even if we don't win on Saturday and should end up as, you know, league champions, that would be legitimate. I mean, add to all this, you know, add to the fact that it's a young squad and that it's an inexpensive squad and that it's a squad that is playing a lot better than people thought they would. The football has been amazing, absolutely amazing. I mean, the funny thing is, if you don't follow the Bundesliga closely and you look at the standings, and you look at, you know, how many points Dortmund are ahead, and you look at their goal difference, and I tell you that the main problem of this team is that they're not taking their chances. You know, you would laugh in my face, but it's true. It's true. The team creates an incredible amount of chances, you know, of clear-cut opportunities in every single game. So that's not... So, with the sole exception, perhaps, of the Hoffenheim game, where we conceded where we scored the equalizer into injury time from a free kick, there was, apart from that one single game, that every game, every win, and every draw has been well deserved.
Well, Uli, I think that we'll have to wrap it up there. I can see the clock on the wall is ticking down. So if we can leave it there, that'd be fantastic. I know that you've got Champions League games to watch this evening. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the show, and I really hope that we can have you on the podcast again. Who knows, to chat about Dortmund lifting the Bundesliga title? How about that?
Well, no, maybe about Bayern Munich winning the Champions League.
Well, maybe that as well. Maybe that as well. Anyway, let's wrap it up there. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you very much, Uli.
Thanks, Uli.
Thank you.
Welcome to part three. Time for us to take a look at the weekend's Bundesliga fixtures, starting with the big one, Bayern Munich v Dortmund. John, we've spoken about both teams in this podcast already, so let's not dwell too long on this fixture. However, do you think that this is a game that Dortmund can afford to lose?
I mean, quite frankly, yeah, they can afford to lose it because of the gap that they have at the top. I think if they'd lost against St. Pauli, it might have been a different matter, but that win was vital just to get momentum back for BVB. And I think that they go to the Allianz Arena, and I personally don't expect them to win. I think that it's a draw at best for Dortmund in this game, because I think that Bayern at the Allianz have just proven over the, not just over the last few weeks, but the last few months, that they are a complete force to be reckoned with now. And as we've already discussed about Robben and Ribery, it's going to be very, very difficult for any side turning up there. So I don't think that Dortmund are going to come out with the 3 points necessarily, but I do think that it's a game that they can afford to lose and still go on and win the championship. It might just make it a little bit closer at the end of the season. But yeah, no, they can afford to lose.
I suppose the supplementary to that, of course, is that if Dortmund win, then they, presumably that should presumably get, if they do the double over Bayern, then they'll have the confidence to go on and close out that title, though, won't they? But a draw, very unlikely with the goal scoring power of both teams, you'd have thought, unless it's like 3-3 or 4-4 or something like that.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. I mean, it's going to be a crack. I mean, by far and away, the two best teams in the division are going head to head in a place where Dortmund don't win very often. So I think it's hugely exciting. Look out for a cracker in this one.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Well, there's a huge 6-pointer at the bottom of the table. We've already spoken about Gladbach before, so we're going to be talking about them again. They do seem to be the sort of, like, you know, the action club at the moment. They have an excellent chance of grabbing a second straight win and putting some pressure on the teams above when they travel to Wolfsburg on Friday. 4 straight defeats for Wolfsburg now, and they haven't won at home since October. John, a defeat on Saturday, and it's panic stations, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Really and truly, it is if they lose against Gladbach. And that's not to say that, you know, Gladbach did well, as we've already discussed, against Schalke last weekend. And there is a lot to be exploited from the Wolfsburg defence. They were absolutely diabolical last time out. I think it was Freiburg, wasn't it, that they played? And they were so static as to be unbelievable. You know, it should have, that scoreline should have been more than it was. They were so static. There were huge gaps in there. How it was at Moor, I really don't know. But you know, these are good defenders as well that we've talked about, with Arne Friedrich and Simon Kjær. It's like they were just like statues. It was unbelievable. I mean, the tumultuous goings on behind the scenes at that at Wolfsburg have had a serious mark on this club. They don't know whether they're coming or going, and I can't really blame them. It's just been horrendous for them. But yeah, I can't see that Pierre Littbarski is going to last any longer if they can't get a result against Borussia Mönchengladbach. And at the same time, though, I don't necessarily think that bringing in a third coach for the season is going to do them much good either. They really just need to pull together as a team. They have what it takes up front to get goals. You know, I actually thought that they looked pretty good in the build-up for Helmes' goal, but at the back they are just an absolute shocker. They're an accident waiting to happen, or to continue happening, and it's prime opportunity for Gladbach to get a few more points on the board. And also, that, you know, it could be a game that could send Wolfsburg into the relegation places if it goes really, really badly.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, just looking at that bottom of that table there, I mean, I think it's nailed on for one of those big teams there. There's going to be a big team that's going to get relegated. You could argue Gladbach are a big team, but you could, but Stuttgart and Wolfsburg, I mean they're looking in such bad shape. There's an element of denial as well that worries me about both teams. I think that they you wonder whether or not, and this happens with big clubs universally, is this element of disbelief as though we won't get relegated because we are who we are. You know, but Kaiserslautern have got some spirit. They're not, maybe not that good, but they've got spirit. And Cologne, obviously, are getting themselves out of there. But you look at that Stuttgart, Wolfsburg and Werder Bremen. Good heavens, could it be? Could it be that that those three clubs are relegated? That would be just cataclysmic, wouldn't you? You know, for the Bundesliga. But
I really think that the thing that I saw from the Wolfsburg game from last weekend is when one of the goals went in against Wolfsburg, there was that classic when defenders are looking around at each other, going, "Well, hang on a minute, how did that happen? Well, that was your fault. No, it's your fault." And you know, that's the point where you know it's all over, because nobody can decide whose responsibility it was, and they have to sort these things out very, very quickly, or else they're going to see themselves in the second division.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that for all of those teams, that all they'll really be praying for is that there is three other clubs worse than they are, or at the very least that the club that finishes second in Division Two has a shocker for the playoff. Looking down at the final dregs of my cold tea, and I can see that we've run out of time. Our profound thanks to Uli for coming on the show. You are positively encouraged to interact with us. Twitter is our preferred medium. I'm at the Bundesbag. John is at Bundesliga World. We both have blog sites. John's is bundesligaworld.blogspot.com. I never get that right. Mine is bundesbag.com. Please do get in touch with us with your thoughts and your suggestions on who you'd like to have on the show, and anything else you think that you might like to see on the show, or rather hear on the show, anything that you can think will help improve the show. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back for next week. And until then, from John and myself, it's goodbye.